Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Candid Community Leadership Podcast. Hey, if this is your first time joining us, thank you for finding us. Thank you for listening in. For those of you that have listened to several of our past podcast episodes, you know that we cover a lot of topics on this podcast. Hopefully, this is content that can be relevant to you if you're listening in as a community leader in other parts of the state or the country. If you're a business leader trying to find resources to grow your business, maybe you're an entrepreneur just looking for examples of successful folks who have started a business and have grown it successfully. We think we've got some value for you specifically today because we're talking about and we're going to feature the next edition of what we call our Story of series. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. But first, welcome in. I'm your host, Nick Glue. And today, again, we're excited to share with you kind of the next edition of our Story of series. And joining me here to kind of kick this into play is Brady Quinn from our Marion Economic Development team. Brady, great. Thank you for joining us again.
Yes, thanks, Nick. Appreciate the time.
So this is the second time that we have done our Story of series. If you missed the story of Bob Sternowski, he founded a company here in Marion called Softronics. Make sure to look at some prior episodes of our leadership podcast. But today we are welcoming in Kyle Martin. We hosted him here in our offices a week or two back here in March of 2023. And Kyle Martin joined us to provide and talk about the story of Martin Gardner Architects. Brady, this is a firm that's really been in our community for several decades.
Yeah, you're right, Nick. MGA, or Martin Gardner Architecture, was actually founded in the mid-80s. And they do a ton of different, provide design services, whether that be residential, commercial structures. We see a lot of examples throughout our community here in Marion, but also throughout all of Eastern Iowa. Mm-hmm. They are a growing firm. They just added their 13th employee, actually introduced her at this Story of event, which was great to meet their growing team. But Kyle Martin did join the firm with his dad back in 2006, and then actually became the president in August of 2017. And they still are located right here uptown Marion and continue to serve the many of the same clients that they have since the mid-80s. And they do actually have a second office location in downtown Owine as well that they recently just opened. So Kyle will go into detail kind of the history and kind of what's led them to their journey and who they are today.
Cool. So Martin Gardner Architects, not just a great architectural design firm, but just great community partners. So hopefully as you listen into this, maybe you have an established company and there's lessons or takeaways that you can learn. Maybe you're an entrepreneur, maybe you're not even an architectural firm, but you're an entrepreneur just looking for lessons to be learned from folks that have grown and continue to grow companies. So with that, here is the story of Martin Gardner Architects.
Thanks everybody for coming. Get that started. I've got some staff here if you guys want to raise your hands. You'll see their faces in the presentation later, but these are the rock stars that we've said we're going to quit using the word rock star, but these guys are awesome, and they really make everything work, and they make my life better than what my dad's life was when he started the company. So let's see. Also, there's swag on the table. We got seed balls, brochures. Feel free to browse those. Take them with you if you've got connection or client that may make use of it. Take a cup, whatever. So, the logo was done by Big Bear Design back in 2013. So we've made good use of his work. So we do have our two offices. Feel free to drive through Owine. We're right there in downtown, across the street from the Mexican restaurant. This is our office here. Mike and Brian, we'll talk more about their Strawberry Point office a little bit, because they used to be out in the middle of nowhere, and now they're in a bustling little downtown, and so they love visitors. So the story of Martin Gardner Architecture actually goes back quite a ways. It starts with a construction company on the Gardner side, Don Gardner Construction. They were based out of Waterloo, and Vivian worked in the office and kind of did the books and that kind of thing, and Don ran the crews and that kind of thing. So they did general construction, metal buildings, all different construction types, things like that. And they had several children, and one of them was Tom Gardner. And on the Martin side, there was Elm Park Plumbing and Electric, which was started by my grandfather, James T. Martin. Haven't owned the property for almost 20 years, but this was actually his shop on the corner of Old Highway 20 outside of Independence and the Quasqueton Diagonal Boulevard. And my dad grew up in that house right next to it. So on the Martin side again, going back before Elm Park Plumbing and Heating, he helped build the Alcan Highway, and he actually didn't help build the highway itself. He was an electrician. He would actually go ahead of the construction crews for the Alcan Highway to set up the camps. So he would go through all kinds of different wilderness, and part of the reason why he was on the Alcan Highway crew with the Army Corps rather than joining the military was because he was an electrician, and he actually fell down inside one of these radio towers, was in the hospital for weeks on end, and ended up with one leg shorter than the other, and so he was medically ineligible to fight. So that's how he got set up with this, and if you were a friend visiting on a holiday or a new fiancé joining the family, you were obligated to sit at the dining room table and listen to Grandpa with his bear claw in hand talk about how he shot a bear. My grandfather, also with the plumbing side of that business, helped build Cedar Rock outside of Quasqueton, which is just a few miles from their shop. Which is a Frank Lloyd Wright house, and that's a picture of the crew. We took a visit last summer. And so there was a unique house at the time because it was in-floor radiant heating and a variety of different systems that were kind of unique. My grandpa would tell a story that Frank Lloyd Wright visited the site, and this was the late 40s, early 50s, and he had a question for Mr. Wright, and he, on the back of a pickup, or on the hood of a pickup truck, on a brown paper bag, sketched out a detail, gave it to him to work, to figure it out, and never kept the brown paper bag. But we do have a set of original blueprints, so don't send this to the Taliesin Fellowship or anything. So that north circle is the Elm Park shop, and then there's a cemetery between. And then while my dad was in high school, my grandfather was building this house over the course of 30 years. Being a contractor, it's built mostly out of leftover parts, but they field built all the trusses and things like that. After working on that Cedar Rock house, incorporated a lot of those ideas about passive solar heating, about framing views, about taking advantage of the sloping landscape up in that area. So as my father was growing up, you can imagine that might have influenced a little bit. My grandfather was also very big into education. He was very big into community service. So he was actually a founding member of Hawkeye Community College with the board. And he has the original sketch of the triangle-shaped campus with the circular building at the end. And here, this is another kind of funny story about my grandpa. So his passion for education was planted early. Having graduated from eighth grade at the age of 11, he completed a normal training certificate and taught in a country school briefly. He then opened his own auto repair shop, which evolved into an electrical wiring business. His business, coupled with family responsibilities and his growing community involvement, kept him busy for the next 40 years. At age 72, remember, he just had a eighth grade education, Jim decided to return to school, taking Hawkeye's general technology degree program, and he completed the course in 1990, graduating while currently serving as a trustee of the college. So I got to go to his graduation. Another funny story about graduating at 11, he would take the Model T truck that his family had and pick up all the kids on the way to the country school. Did that for a couple years, and then can anybody guess why he wasn't able to drive those kids to school after that? Because they passed the driver's license law and he couldn't drive again until he was 16. All right, so moving on. So A key part of a lot of architects in Iowa, really a lot of designers in Iowa, is Iowa State University. Both Tom Gardner and Dave Martin went to Iowa State in the late 60s, early 70s, actually most, yeah. And there's several buildings that are very important in the history of the design professions. For my dad and Tom, it was a building that used to be in this area. It was a leftover engineering building. They were on the second floor. It was a real armpit, leftovers. Engineering college didn't really want it anymore. And then when the next generation came through, after they built Hilton Coliseum, the old Armory building became, which is also the drill floor for the ROTC, it became the design studios for the for architecture college, interior design, and other departments. And then in the 70s, so my dad took most of his classes in the Armory, and then in the 70s when he came back for, or late 70s when he came back for grad school, he was actually in the new design college, which coincidentally is the ugliest building on campus. It's known as the eraser or the doorstop. One of our architecture professors said that if it ever caught fire, even though it's concrete and steel, the middle atrium would blow out and it would be a wind tunnel of flaming fire. So this is the inside of the Armory. You can see it used to hold all kinds of events. That was probably maybe a graduation. And then this is what it looks like today with all the studio walls built inside. So here's that eraser building. The inside of that building gets very hot, especially on the fifth floor. So these are all our ISU grads that are currently here with the company. So after graduation, Tom and Dave, they actually crossed paths at Flynn Saito Anderson Architects in the early and mid-70s. And from there, Dave actually got laid off. Tom had been there a couple years longer. And the threat of layoffs during that time was always kind of around. And so Tom decided to go out on his own. At that point, there were different rules about licensure. And so that's when my dad decided to go back to grad school. Tom, through his experience, didn't need that advanced degree. So he got with timing and that kind of stuff. So he didn't have to go back to grad school. So this is Tom. He was an outdoorsman, kind of a back to nature, a little bit of a hippie. He with his wife Bev, they bought an acreage south of Strawberry Point, if you know where Strawberry Point is, off of Highway 13. So the idea is you come up Highway 13, rather than go to Strawberry Point, you take a straight off of that. Rather than going to Backbone State Park, you go off of that. You find the mailbox, you turn left, you go down the drive, past the cows, past the turkeys, past the deer. And you arrive at a pretty cool place. So this is, upper left is the driveway. It backs up to the bluffs. This is just a couple hundred feet behind the barn. This was the original office that they had. It was a silage building. So that's where Mark and Mike and Brian worked with Tom. This is just the fence line that divides the neighbor's cow pasture from the parking lot. And this was the inside of the second office that they had on the property. So that first office was right here. The house was over here where Tom had his hippie outdoor showers and that kind of stuff. And then this barn, they actually relocated the upper half of it from a farm, I think 7 miles away, rebuilt the main floor. And so this was, and then they insulated it from the outside, so they preserved all that inside barn work. So that was the crew from the Strawberry Point office that now Mark mostly works out of his home in Nashua, but Mike and Brian are in Oline. And one thing that was common between the two, having contractor family backgrounds, having kind of that Midwest practicality, that Midwest personality, that it was about client service, it was about contractor relations, treating people fairly, practicality, sound construction concepts, and particularly for Tom working in Northeast Iowa, working with underserved populations and underserved communities. So then pushing ahead to, So Tom started Gardner Architecture in 1983. 1985, Dad and Mom moved back from Rochester, where she was nursing up there, and joined forces with Chuck Bruggeman, who many of you probably know in town. He's a local designer. And they started a partnership in 1985. Chuck was very busy. Dad moved to town. They actually got connected. I forget his name, but he was the owner of Star Equipment at the time. So this partnership lasted for 2 years. Then they changed the state rules on licensure and architecture firm ownership. At that time, it had to be 100% architect owned. Chuck wasn't licensed, so they had to dissolve that partnership. So in 1987 is when that partnership broke up. Dad went out on his own. This is a picture from the ribbon cutting right there. There's Dad. And this was from the Chamber of Commerce. I don't know if anybody here remembers Dan Borman. There's a flashback to some of the work that they did back in the late 80s, early 90s. This was mostly Westdale Mall. Also, I don't know if this is violating any kind of like non-disclosure agreement, but this is Clark McLeod's house that we did back in the early 90s. It was pretty awesome because there's a waterfall that's like this, the width of this room. You can turn on with a light switch. I got pet toads here. I got to swim in the pool. It was pretty sweet. Dad also brought home like extra trim pieces that I turned into marble chutes and stuff. It was a lot of fun. I just want to highlight this building real quick. We've got a long relationship with this building. Everybody knows the Railroad Depot used to actually sit over here. And in 1988, it was in danger of being torn down. And so Dad did the drawings to move the building to its current site. It was a huge community effort. Community members came out, cleaned off bricks. Coonrod moved the roof. And then... Of course, the streetscape came through, gave it a little bit of a new life, and then the derecho obviously damaged it pretty heavily, and we helped with the repairs to get it back to a workable state, and in my opinion, improve it, because we got rid of some of the stuff that was never supposed to be installed in there anyway. So 1992, or let's see, I'm missing a slide. Oh yeah, no, so this was the office back then, in 1985 to 1992. Okay, so 1992, we move into our current location, and that's the ribbon cutting from that event. And since that time, we've had over 270 projects in Marion city limits. This is the inside of our Marion office. A couple years ago, we've since painted. That door has actually got some color test samples on it. But believe it or not, there were pigeons flying through here when we moved in. There were holes in the floor, holes in the wall, all kinds of electrical issues. Sarah probably remembers the day when the electrical cabinet blew up. Yep. So these were the territories that Gardner Architecture served in the green, being Northeast Iowa, and that Martin Design Office served, mostly South, East Central and South Central, Southeast Iowa. A little bit of timeline, just since... A more recent timeline, I'll say. So Sarah joined the office, I think, in 2000. Started as an intern, has been with us since 2006. I joined the office after graduating 2008, if I got that right. Justin, our current chief operations officer, started as a business manager, just kind of doing day-to-day stuff, and now he's our first line of defense in everything business. In 2009, Tom passed away. Tom Gardner passed away, and that left them without a licensed architect. The remaining staff, Mike, Brian, and Mark, they kind of interviewed some area architects, wanted to see who was interested in buying the assets of the firm and taking the company. They chose us. It was just personality-wise, it was a great fit. We had a lot of common, again, those common principles and common ways of trying to operate. In 2013, we had the logo change. I mentioned Big Bear helped us with that. And then in 2014, Derek joined, and he's become our real technology, and or not just technology, but digital media, and we'll show some of those fun things later. In 2015, we went through kind of a mission statement kind of a process with core values and things like that with authentic compassing. That same year, Caitlin Hayward, our interior designer, joined. There she is. And in 2016, Bethany joined us. She really wanted to just walk two blocks to get to work. She's actually scanning some buildings down in Muscatine today, and she's our historic preservation specialist. In 2017, Dave retired, and I took over the firm. In 2020, we all know what happened then, which was actually really transformative for me as an owner and my own growth, and for I think a lot of our staff to make transitions to the next steps in how this company should run and wants to run. So while it was really hard and really devastating, I think it provided a lot of growth for us. 2021, the Strawberry Point office moved to Olwine. So what happened there was Bev, Tom's widow, was still living on the property. Her son, who had worked for Tom off and on through the years, he had been doing mission work in South America. He and his wife wanted to move back and thought our office would be really nice for his house. So we got evicted. For the best of reasons, I suppose. In 2022, Ingrid joined us. She's originally from Peru. She was a licensed architect there. And brings a whole host of talents and skills that we're still unfolding and realizing. Jacob joined us straight out of Kirkwood, also in 2022. And then in 2023, this year so far, we've added Kristen, our office manager, and Gabe has rejoined us. So 2023 is kind of what's coming next. So here's the ribbon cutting from our Olwine office. This is the inside. I know, isn't it? It was an exciting day, and almost everybody was wiped out with COVID and that kind of stuff that day. So let's see. Okay, so with that 2020, you know, through over the years, Tom and Dave, they developed their own systems. They built their own sets of experience. They had 30 years to build this repertoire, this way of doing things, and they communicated that on a small scale with 3 to 7 people in their firms at any one time. And it never allowed them to let go of their firm, their company, the way a lot of companies have difficulty transitioning. And so we had random spreadsheets, random PowerPoints, random, you know, templates and things like that. And so when I took over, it was, let's consolidate that. Let's get that as a standard operating procedure kind of a thing. And so whether it was a time-tested process of pre-selecting a general contractor that my dad had developed over the years and just getting it into a solid format in a central location on the server. being able to compare those contractors, being able to be fair with those contractors, being objective in the information that we're trying to help an owner get through, whether that's on the public bidding side, on the private contracting side. We also wanted to get consistent with how we talk about what we care about as a firm. So we developed these design principles, which are pretty much what a lot of architecture firms have. You know, it's things about, you know, being innovative, having healthy environments. It's about aesthetics. It's about proper function. It's about cost effectiveness, although some firms don't care about cost effectiveness. It's about energy efficiency. And with that, like when we finally got the chance to say this is what this stuff means to us, we can then start to translate that what that means to our different client types. Sustainability, and I'll get to this hopefully in a second. So when we look at a general, this is our website. So a general business, we call it, that's our work category of projects, and we've got our historic category of projects. They have a lot of similar desires, similar needs, similar outcomes, but they talk about them in really different ways. So while the piggy bank is important on both sides of these projects, for the business side of things, any commercial enterprise must turn a profit. Boom, number one, bottom line. We make sure that our customer's best interest is behind every decision we make, whether it's through energy efficient upgrades, renovations, planning for the future, or pursuing a new facility, eliminating unnecessary waste, steps, space, and reduce overhead. That's the business case. For a historic project, for a historic client, they have a different take on that. the value is beyond just dollars per square foot. You may need to qualify for special grants, programs. Various public and private agencies have different rules about how they use money. We're experienced with dealing with these programs, and we have tools to take advantage of all the funding opportunities available. That's how we translate dollars for what that means to different client types. And we also, internally, we also look at that too. So we're all kind of design-minded, except maybe Justin, because he runs the dollars the most. But we all have our individual interests. Some of it might be recreational. Some of it might be what we're interested in how we serve our community. So these are just a few. I haven't listed everybody's. We've always been encouraged to serve on public boards, to be active in our community, to be active with our family in the community and things like that. And so when you look at, say, Brian, for example, he's a 20-plus year volunteer firefighter, just retired as assistant fire chief from Fairbank Fire Department. He's designed 20-some fire stations in the last 20 years. Mike really gets along with library directors for some reason. and he also really likes working with small rural governments. He's on rural housing initiatives. He likes going and interacting with those county supervisors and things like that. And so those are the types of projects we encourage him to seek out and work with. You see dogs show up a lot of times. Sarah, for example, she adopted her dog Izzy how many years ago?
We've had her 16. She will be 17 at the end of May.
Yeah, she's a good old dog. We ended up designing the Animal Welfare Friends facility out in Monticello where she picked Izzy up. So these are the different categories that our website has. Again, we try to tailor that messaging to what makes sense for that client. And so this is how that translates into our actual process. So we're working with St. Joe's Catholic Church here in Marion right now. We look at their mission, their core. We want to understand what they're about so that we can properly communicate with them. So how that works then, so again, making that process consistent, making that messaging proper every time. All of our project managers, we're all forgetful. We all handle things in slightly different ways. But there's certain touch points where the client needs consistency. And so we've developed these little explainer videos, and hopefully maybe the sound will work. We'll find out. Caitlin's our narrator.
The endeavor of a new building project can be a daunting task, especially if an owner has no experience in design or construction.
Okay. So the idea is that we identify those personas, and then we look at the project through their eyes of what's going to make their experience ideal. What do we eliminate to get out of the way for barriers? What do we enhance with additional little positive experiences? And that translates into actual space in the end. It translates into what space is what, where the restrooms are in relation to the lobby, or where the reception desk is in relation to the delivery door, and things like that. So developing more of these explainer videos all the time just to build that consistency to get, and these we show these with the owner, to get the owner's thinking about these things, because that's the information that we need to make a better design. There we go. So we collect all that information essentially in dumb spreadsheets right now. We're actually working with an app developer so that it becomes more intuitive, a lot slicker, and things like that. We also work with stakeholders, you know, people that make decisions on your behalf of a project, whether that's the building department or local government or funding agencies and things like that. Because we want to understand the whole project from start to finish. And that helps us build this set of information that we can use moving forward in the project, even as we're selecting furniture, even as we're closing out construction, that this was important in the beginning. Here's how it translates at the very end. And did we accomplish that, and if we didn't accomplish that to the highest degree, how can we improve that next time? We're narrowing in processes on, like, you know, how do we pick materials? Too often we default to, well, this is the least expensive, or, well, I really like brick. Well, the owner said they like brick. Well, let's give them brick. Well, what color of brick? Well, how big a brick? What texture? developing all these sets of questions to narrow in and really get what the owner is trying to say, because too often, and there, Kara Briggs, farmer, local artist here, she has the same thing. She did a big art piece for us in our lobby. She says, I don't want to be nitpicky as we're going through the process. She's like, no, I like this, because I really hate clients that just say, I don't like it. So again, material choice, things like that. This building was actually on the Gardner, or those two buildings were actually on the Gardner site. Metal, glass. We talk about with owners what these materials mean. You know, glass can take on a variety of different characters: reflective, cleanliness, transparency, things like that. Color, of course, whether it's warm or cool, neutral. And we've got a process where we show them images of other projects from around the world throughout history that they can react against, as far as, yeah, I really like this, or I like this building, but like that thing bothers me and I don't know why. There's a visual communication there beyond just words. And again, we collect all this stuff in dumb spreadsheets. So all of this information, we can start to identify different spaces of like, what spaces need to be branded, because according to the user persona tool, this is their journey through the building. We want that message that your client is receiving is consistent all the way through. Or this is the back work area. We want this to be a safe manufacturing environment. Well, yes, let's brand all our safety information. Let's brand all our teamwork values and things like that and put that in those spaces. So it also comes down to building performance with energy. We know that there's certain types of spaces that perform better when they face different directions against the sun or against the northwest wind. We don't like in Iowa to put our entry doors on the northwest side of the building because that winter wind will snap somebody's leg off. And we don't like putting offices with huge windows facing certain directions because glare and heat buildup is a real issue. But they do like daylight. They may need a view. And so we're working with a lot of different technologies to take that into account and then measure that on the backside. So these are just a couple of random projects I threw in here. This is the Roby Library up in Waukon. This is the Clear Creek Trailhead down in Coralville. Just a restroom building that can flood. This is a project in Manchester. It's the Manchester Whitewater Park, which is a pretty cool place anyway. But we did this building, and part of it was we wanted to tell that story about the community because this was an old rail site. And so Michael, who used to work for us, he went to the University of Iowa. He did some digging on the history, found this photo of the Manchester Oneida Railway Company. We found a way to get this image digitized and then work with a local fabricator with a plasma cutter to cut these little tiny holes to create a metal scrim effect to show that image. And those are the kinds of things like, that was really cool, let's get it into our process, because that may have value to a client. And in the end, it wasn't all that expensive. This is out at Wiki Up Hill, little bird observatory. It's a really neat little project. Another thing that we've gotten into is 3D scanning. This has been kind of a game changer because before everybody has to field measure, and contractors know that tape measures actually do stretch. What's that?
I said or sag.
Or sag, yeah. Or there's furniture in the way. So with the scanner, we can get every space. You scan it once, you scan it again, it talks to the previous scan, we upload it to the cloud, we get it back in a 3D model. Bethany, who does a lot of our historic work, she was in a building just the other day. As she was in there, she could feel that the floor sloped just a little bit. And when she got into the 3D model, she could see that, yes, it's like 2 1/4 inches across 20-some feet. And it's that important. We found that all the walls in our Olwine office weren't built square, even though they were built like 5 years ago. So like 6 inches out of square. It was really bad. So you can see how this starts to translate into being important for projects. We do a lot of additions and renovations. So you can see adding the new addition onto this old church building, getting those pieces and dimensions correct is pretty critical. This is another historic project. So up in McGregor, they got hit by a tornado several years ago. We didn't have the scanner at the time, so the contractor had to do a lot more kind of field investigation to find out what needed to be done. This is the Anamosa storefronts. So we take whole downtown blocks through a federal grant and redo the storefronts, spruce them up, do repair work, and it really changes those small communities that need a lift. This is just a few examples of some of the kind of 3D work, digital media that Derek has really helped us pioneer the last several years, whether it's just 3D renderings, whether it's working with diagrams, whether it's virtual reality and things like that. This is a project that we'll actually get a little tour of if you like. So this is the Revitalize U Med Spa down in North Liberty. This is a rendering we did. It doesn't look exactly like that now. But if you take out your phone and scan this QR code, like do it now. So where that code goes to is if you hold your phone up, it's actually like augmented reality. So you can look around the individual spaces. And if you tap on the little white circles, so you can look around like this in the space, this is kind of what it looks like. If you tap on the circles, you jump to another part of the building and you can look at that. So this has been, this is becoming more and more helpful for capital campaigns, for owners communicating with their prospects, with their clients, with their constituents and patrons. So that's the talk. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Or if you guys want to add anything as far as the exciting stuff that we're working on or whatever. So growing up, dad. Yeah. Mom was a skeptic the whole way. And I didn't really intend on being an architect. I would much rather have been an artist growing up. And I was under the impression that in order to be an artist and make money, you had to go to a big city, which we have a lot of great artists in the area that are proving otherwise now. My wife was my high school sweetheart, and she didn't want to move too terribly far away. And so when I was good enough at math and science and I loved art, that architecture became natural. It's like, well, I either figure out how to compete with dad, which is going to be weird, or I try working with him. And it worked well enough most of the time. But growing up, like running around the building, like skateboarding upstairs while they were renovating it on the weekends, and watching this whole area grow. And again, that community, that civic participation is a huge part of the company's history on both sides. And so dad being, past president of the chamber and being involved with Medco and just being involved, and I was in three different boys youth groups at one time in high school. Sports and activities and all that stuff. So a lot of that stuff just translated through pretty naturally. There were definitely rough times working for dad from time to time, but that there's family dynamics. There's dad was not always easy to work with, work for in general, but then taking over, like I said, he had 30 years to figure all this stuff out, kind of slowly on a smaller scale. And so when I took over the president role, having the leadership team with Justin and Sarah and Mark, that they didn't have that experience necessarily either, but they were a second, third, and fourth voice of reason to say, Kyle, that sounds reasonable. You can do that. Or that seems a little out there. And also, dad had other networks as well, as far as he's in the local executive club, he was in Optimist Club, things like that. But I'm a member of the Lodge and some stuff like that, I've also joined a chief executive network, which is a nationwide network of architects, and having that level of getting into the nitty-gritty of personal company problems without competing, because on the state level there's a little bit of awkwardness sometimes in trying to say I'm working with this client, this is super difficult, and then suddenly Martin Gardner's got problems over there. So having those networks has been really key and really important, and knowing that having the relationships with other people on the contractor side, they're very helpful because they're always encouraging. Contractors want a good project just as much as architects. So that's one thing that we really have taken from that as well. Yeah.
What's been your most challenging project in water?
Most challenging. I don't recommend managing projects while you're taking over a firm. That makes it difficult. It's almost never. Yeah, it's almost never the building itself. Like we've sawed buildings in half and moved buildings and put them back together and patched them up and made them look awesome. And the struggle is really managing those expectations of the client representative or somebody involved in the approval process. That's where that user persona and stakeholder tools came out. That let's get everything on the table of what you expect from us and what we expect from you, and really try and find out what's driving why you're so pissed off all the time.
Get the people out of the way.
Right? Yeah, exactly. 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 Oh, you just really like red.
What do you think, Kyle, biggest challenge for the firm today as you move forward, and it can't be talent people?
It's,
that's the obvious one.
Yeah. No, I mean, the next step is, and Derek and I talk about this like almost every day, and leadership talks about this at every meeting, is automation. Like, Derek's been dabbling with ChatGPT and some of these image generator things that we're actually trying to work into our process. Because if we can get, here's a set of information we got from the owner, yeah, we can start thinking about, oh yeah, Villa Savoie in France that was done by whoever, and it was in 1929, and yeah, let me go dig that precedent out because it might help us design. We can send that information into a black box, and it generates not always perfect, almost never perfect, but another tool of this is where you might go, this is where you could go. So it's unfolding all these possibilities really fast, and so leveraging those options, getting to answers faster, getting to more options faster, so that ultimately we make it better. That automation we've proved with our Revit modeling systems and things like that, that we're eliminating problems, we're speeding up our individual processes so that we don't have to hire more people. You know, that long term, is there going to be population collapse? Who knows? You know, there's all kinds of big things that the All In podcast talks about. But the technology is really what we've turned the corner on the last few years, that we were always kind of aware of. It's like, yeah, we used AutoCAD back in the 80s, but did we use it the way that it was built for back then? Back then it was just automating drafting. Now it's truly information transfer. So,
yeah. So we actually had Medco had a speaker on Wednesday about succession planning and things. And so you had talked about some of the introspective work that you've done as a company. So going through some of your management processes and culture, mm-hmm. and things like that, as well as then kind of moving forward and joining this Chief Executive Network. What would be something that you would say that you just learned either personally about yourself or about running the business that you'd be willing to share, and then maybe if there's something that came out of your group, your company, as we've got a number of people here, what did you guys learn about yourselves through that process?
Definitely learned you don't know what you don't know. Books are your friend. YouTube is your friend. Those networks are your friend. Suspending disbelief sometimes is really important. Just since I took over, like this is the list of books that I've read. Some of them are straight up business. Like, I would recommend to anybody thinking about owning a business, E-Myth Revisited. Get it like now. It's that book probably saved my life. And I think it changed. It was so good. I had the rest of leadership read it because it was like, we got to be thinking about this stuff. And a lot of it is about those standard operating procedures. Like, whatever you do every day repetitively, write it down somewhere. because you're going to have to transfer that information at some point. There's a lot of mental health stuff. There's a lot of habit stuff. You know, a lot of these are just classic business books, but it's learning is just being open to learning and being open to telling other people what they might find useful, because they'll reciprocate it right back. I found this the other day and it's been helpful, for sure, right? Yeah, and so part of that is starting to build, like, okay, if you're an entry level position, here's a book you read before you join our company. Or if you want to get into project management, here's a list of books that you should read before you start taking on those duties. If you want to be on the leadership team, here's a book you got to read, E-Myth Revisited. So, yeah. Alan.
I was going to ask something along the same sort of lines, but how did you know, all that tacit knowledge that your father and all that had over the 30 years, how difficult was it to take all that stuff and put it into words, as you said?
From what we had learned from him over the years and trying to get it documented.
Yeah.
It's been very what's the right word I'm looking for? Organic, as organic as Excel spreadsheets can get. My staff loves Excel now. Scheduling meetings are always fun. Yeah. So like that, some of those tools, I'll show you what we've got developed so far. So like this, each one of these is a tab of a tool that we can use in the design or construction process. So some of these were already created, just scattered about on our server, like I said. And so getting it into a central location and then making the logic of the formulas work and then teaching people how to use it. I mean, it's... Yeah, and learning the most efficient way of, like, when do you teach someone how to use this tool? Well, you don't teach them as soon as you finish the tool. You teach them when they need it, so that, you know, it gets baked in right. So.